We have been looking in the life of Abraham over the last 3 months or so on Sunday nights, in between other events and things that we've had going on. And we want to come back to Abraham tonight. Next Sunday night will be a mission service, and the Sunday night after that, a combined hymn sing at the church that we've been sharing with on the fifth Sunday night of each month. And they have a hymn sing at 6 o'clock and a pretty amazing ice cream social afterwards. And they've invited us to be a part of that again in 2 weeks. And so we plan to be there and hope you can join us. Pastor Harry Harder, we didn't mention his name tonight, but we could have. Pastor there also has cancer and very serious cancer, and he's been undergoing some tests and been down to Philadelphia to their cancer institute there. And we want to pray for Pastor Harry, and that church has invited us to join him again on the last Sunday night of the month. And so we're planning to do that. But tonight we're going to come back to the story and the life of Abraham. We've been following through Abraham's life, beginning in chapter 11 of Genesis, and looking at who he is and the amazing faith that he had, and how it is that this man, Abraham, seemed to so connect with God in a way that no one else had ever done before that we know of in the history of the Old Testament in the early chapters of the book of Genesis. We studied the life of Noah about 6 months ago, and he did connect with God in an amazing way. But here Abraham, just in an even more way, connected with God, and somehow God saw within Abraham an amazing faith, an amazing character, and yet Abraham was not perfect. There are things that we see in his life that, if we're honest, we look at and we're left and we realize that Abraham isn't more perfect than we are. In fact, Abraham was a man, and he wasn't perfect. And our story tonight that we're going to look at may show some of those weaknesses in Abraham. And I want to jump ahead tonight in the book of Genesis to chapter 20 and the story of two men, Abraham and a king named Abimelech. We've been following Abraham's life, and the last time we were in Abraham a couple of weeks ago, we read of the amazing story in chapter 18 of three visitors who came to Abraham and to Abraham's settlement, to his tent. And these mysterious visitors came, and Abraham kind of treated them like they were absolute royalty. I mean, he hustled around to get together a meal and gifts and food, and he knew that these three visitors were very special and very important. We read about how they're called angels in one place, in another place, the Lord himself. Some people believe that as that fourth man was in the fiery furnace with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the book of Daniel, the fourth one, the Son of Man, that perhaps this is the other story from the Old Testament, that one of those visitors was Jesus himself, who came before he came to the world when he came incarnate in a baby. Perhaps this was another time that Jesus appeared. Some people believe that based on the text and things about it. But whoever these mysterious visitors were, Abraham recognized them as from the Lord. And so he wanted to honor them and prepare a meal and listen to them. And he knew that the message that they had were very important. And so they talked to Abraham about some things in his life and about who he was. And they made an amazing promise to Abraham and Sarah that Sarah, within 1 year, was going to have a baby boy. And of course, the reaction we read from Sarah was not with the men. That would not have been appropriate in that culture. She would have been behind the scenes, maybe in the tent, away. But Hera heard the three visitors say that within a year, Abraham, your wife's going to have a baby. And her reaction was to laugh in disbelief. There's no way that I'm going to have a baby after all this time. I'm an old woman. I'm used up, she said, one translation says. But God knew that it was possible. The angel, the visitor of the Lord said, is anything impossible for God? And the truth was, God did the impossible with Abraham and Sarah and would bring them a baby boy. Well, that was chapter 18. And in chapter 21, the birth of Isaac takes place. So between the beginning part of chapter 18 and the beginning of chapter 21, you have several stories in between them. And we're going to look at one of those stories tonight. Several events are recorded in between the arrival of the visitors And exactly 1 year later, less than a year later, they said, when Sarah would be holding a baby boy, 1 year would elapse in that time. In chapters, the second half of chapter 18 and all of chapter 19, and this story in chapter 20, are things, other stories that took place in the life and times of Abraham. And so when we look at this story in chapter 20, we realize that it might not be in a sequential timing to the story of the three visitors and Sarah. It could be that all this happened in 1 year, but if you read those 2.5 chapters, all that to happen in a year seems very unlikely, with Lot and Sodom and Gomorrah and several things that are told in those chapters. And so it looks like chapter 20 in this story of Abraham and Abimelech actually may have taken place earlier, but as Moses wrote down the story and put together different events, he didn't necessarily record them all as happening in the same place. For example, in the prior chapter, you talk about events in Lot's life that last for 20 years. And obviously, it's not a chronological telling of 20 years if you have 20 years between chapter 18 and chapter 21, because we know there's only 1 year between Sarah being told she's going to have a boy and she has a boy. But we're kind of going to look at the timing tonight. Turn to chapter 20, and I'm going to read the 18 verses of chapter 20. And if you want to read along in your Bible, that'd be great. Or if you just want to listen. And what do you believe God is saying to us? We believe that in every story of the Bible, God says something to us. And I think it's so true of this story of Abraham and Abimelech. Reading Genesis chapter 20, verse 1. Now Abraham moved on from there into the region of the Negev and lived between Kadesh and Shur. For a while he stayed in Gerar, and there Abraham said of his wife Sarah, "She is my sister." Then Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent for Sarah and took her. But God came to Abimelech in a dream one night and said to him, "You are as good as dead because of the woman you have taken. She is a married woman." Now Abimelech had not gone near her, so he said, "Lord, will you destroy an innocent nation? Did he not say to me, 'She is my sister'? And didn't she also say, 'He is my brother'? I have done this with a clear conscience and clean hands." Then God said to him in a dream, "Yes, I know you did this with a clear conscience, and so I have kept you from sinning against me. That is why I did not let you touch her. Now return the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you will live. But if you do not return her, you may be sure that you and all yours will die." Early the next morning, Abimelech summoned all his officials, and when he told them all that had happened, they were very much afraid. Then Abimelech called Abraham in and said, "What have you done to us? How have I wronged you that you have brought such great guilt upon me and my kingdom? You have done things to me that should not be done." And Abimelech asked Abraham, "What was your reason for doing this?" Abraham replied, "I said to myself, 'There is surely no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my sister.'" Or, I'm sorry, because of my wife. "Besides, she really is my sister, the daughter of my father, and though not of my mother, and she became my wife. And when God had me wander, wandered from my father's household, I said to her, 'This is how you can show your love to me. Everywhere we go, say of me, he is my brother.'" Then Abimelech brought sheep and cattle and male and female slaves and gave them to Abraham. And he returned Sarah, his wife, to him. And Abimelech said, "My land is before you. Live wherever you like." To Sarah, he said, "I am giving your brother 1,000 shekels of silver. This is to cover the offense against you before all who are with you. You are completely vindicated." Then Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his slave girl so that they could have children again. For the Lord had closed up every womb in Abimelech's household because of Abraham's wife, Sarah. This really is another amazing story in Abraham's life. We look at Abraham's character, and sometimes when we read these stories, we have to stop. At least I do, and I think, did Abraham do what was right here? What is it about how Abraham handled himself? Was this what God wanted him to do? Or perhaps again, does Abraham get out in front of God and away from God's will, and he expresses a propensity to make decisions before knowing what God wanted him to do? Well, let's look first tonight in this story at the timing of the story. I said before that chronologically, this story really seems to not be located in the chronological right place in the book of Genesis. And I say that for several reasons. Most commentators believe that. They believe that when this part of Genesis was put together, not every story was placed exactly chronologically in place, because some stories have long parts to them, so they wrap around other stories, and sometimes it's hard to sort out exactly when it took place and that type of thing. Obviously, this story took place before Isaac was born. It had to be before Isaac was born, or there would not have been several of the issues that we find in the story of Abimelech. In chapter 18, we're already told that Sarah is old and she's past childbearing. At least she believes that, and that she really has no more hope. In fact, we know that she's 86 years old in chapter 18. We know that she has her son Isaac when she's 87 years old. And so when we read this story, just before the birth of Isaac, it seems to be out of place. I mean, how could it that this woman, who is 86 years old and presumably past childbearing, is taken by King Abimelech? In this story, Sarah seems to be young enough to be very attractive and young enough to be taken into a king's harem and to be singled out among all the women that might have been in Abraham's entourage, and the king, Abimelech, chooses her to be his wife. Now, we know in the culture of the day that oftentimes marriages took place to sign a treaty between groups of people, and there could have been something like that, but this doesn't seem to be that way. It seems like Abimelech and his officials in the kingdom where he was at had noticed this woman and presumably how beautiful she was. Now, if she was 87 years old and well past childbearing, it's kind of hard to believe that Abimelech would have reached out for her in the way that that he did. The king had chosen her because he saw her as one who could bear him children. You might say marriage material. And we know that she was very attractive when she was very young. We read of Sarah twice before how beautiful she was. And as she got older, of course, that would have changed somewhat the beauty that she would have been. And it would seem in this story that Sarah is not known all over as Abraham's wife. Later on, she will be known as Abraham's wife. But even at this point, it seems like in the story that it's not yet known all about Abraham and this man and his life and all those things. It's almost as if this story takes place when they first came out of Egypt. I mean, this is very similar to what happened in Egypt. And Abraham was down there, and he was afraid that Pharaoh was going to take his wife because she was so beautiful. And so he told a falsehood. She's my sister, or at least half a lie. She's my sister. His motivation was to protect him and her. And kind of the same thing happens now. And it seems like these events probably may even take place a little bit closer. It would fit also kind of the idea of this timing with a place where the story takes place. Verse 1 says, "Now Abraham moved on from there into the region of the Negev and lived between Kadesh and Shur. For a while he stayed in Gerar." The next slide is going to show you a picture of where Gerar is. And I know you can't read the names up there, but I can tell you a little bit about that. That red area, within that is the name Gerar. If you look at that, that's about 30 miles across a desert from the area that Abraham would settle, well, there it goes, would settle later, of Hebron. And I talked a couple of weeks ago about the significance of Hebron to Abraham's life. In other words, he's pretty far from Hebron right here. Now, this place, Gerar, is considered part of the desert of Shur, which is the desert that goes down into the Sinai Peninsula and down to Egypt. And so some people believe that as Abraham came up out of Egypt and began to decide where he was going to settle, where he was going to live, this may have been one of those time periods and chapters in Abraham's life as he made his way north and made his way to Hebron, where he would be when the visitors came to him. And so that's one of the reasons why a lot of people, at least commentators, believe that this story takes place earlier in in Abraham's life. Well, let's look at Abraham in this story. I've said before, when we've looked at Abraham, we've questioned. I remember I asked you to vote a couple times on Abraham's character and what you thought of some of the decisions that he made. Well, let's look at Abraham in this story. We know that Abraham has moved his family and his flocks and his slaves, his men servant and his maidservants. And apparently Abraham is very wealthy, which he knew he was when he came up out of Egypt. You remember why he was so wealthy? Because the Pharaoh was so concerned that he had taken this man's wife, who he thought was his sister, that then the Pharaoh gave him all kinds of men servants and flocks. And he basically made Abraham a rich man. So he comes up out of Egypt, and lo and behold, the same thing seems to happen again here. It seems right away that Abraham goes back into what will be the promised land with kind of the same fear, the same anxiety, the same falsehood, if you would, that he had when he came to Egypt. Again, he says to Sarah, early on in their lives, "Sarah, you are so exceptionally beautiful that people will want to take you if they know that you are my wife. And they'll want to kill me, because if they kill me, then you don't have a husband." It's kind of strange, the culture and the morality that existed in the culture in Abraham's life. It would be very wrong for a man to take your sister for his wife. I mean, you have to negotiate with a brother for your wife. You can't take her. That'd be wrong. However, if you killed him, then you could have his wife. I mean, it kind of seems a little, you know, to us in our culture, well, I think to any culture, that would seem a little backwards, but that's really the way it was. If she is Abraham's sister, then there's a certain honor that's given to Abraham. Now, if she's Abraham's wife, then that's different. He's almost fair game to take his wife, it would seem like. Well, whatever the case, she must have been remarkably attractive even at this time. Again, this would seem to take place before she was at the age that she was, and she had to be remarkably attractive. He thought, Abraham did, that he would be protected if people believed and thought that Sarah was his sister. In fact, he thought, well, this will lead to people treating me very well, and it did. He was probably afraid of being killed. May have been afraid of that they would take by force. And so this story seems a lot like it was in Egypt. He seems, again, to lack the trust that God's going to take care of him at this point in his life. He seems to still be at a weak place in his life where he trusts God completely about what's going to happen to him. I believe, like us, like you, like me, faith is a journey. There are times in our lives when we recognize that our faith might be, it's not where we wish it would be, but God works in us to build, and I think Abraham's life was like that. Abraham had remarkable faith, but his life was a journey of testing, a journey of talking to God, a journey of listening and responding and hearing again the promises of God making a covenant to him. And Abraham's whole life is a journey. This is one of those chapters that maybe you might say for Abraham was one of those learning experiences. You've probably had experiences in your life and chapters in your life when you've gone through something pretty difficult and you realize as you came out of them, I would never want to go through that again. But I could see that God was with me during that time. And I wonder if the story of Abimelech is not like that for Abraham. And he seems to lack the trust that God would watch over him. Maybe he still lacks the trust that God's going to give him a son from his own loins. Now, we also know of Abraham that he shows in this story a lack of discernment. Maybe a lack of, you say, boy, was Abraham imperfect? Yes, he was. If you want to just hold up the biblical characters, these guys are all perfect, and I should be like Abraham. No, that's not really how we should look at Abraham. We would say Abraham was a man. And he had great faith, and God used him in a mighty way, and God put his hand on him. But that doesn't mean that Abraham was perfect. The truth is that God has his hand on people who are not perfect, too. And Abraham's life is like that. He did have a lack of faith. And one of the things in this story is he had a lack of discernment. He had a lack of, he misjudged Abimelech. I don't know how to really read this story in any other way to say that Abraham misjudged Abimelech. He believed that Abimelech would not do what was right. He believed that Abimelech would kill him. He said basically that I'm going to have to deceive him to get what I want. And again, I think Abraham shows here a lack not only of trust in God, but also a lack of getting it right. I mean, you look at verse 11. Abraham replied, I said to myself, there is surely no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. I mean, look at verse 11 and how he, it says Abraham replied. Abimelech says to Abraham, why did you do this? Why did you tell this lie? And this is Abraham's response. First of all, he says, I said to myself. I think, boy, that's a sermon right there. I said to myself. You know, sometimes, you know, when we're dealing with something that's difficult, we kind of almost get, first we're talking to ourselves and we talk ourselves into something. You know, we think about it a little bit too much. We're a little bit on our own. We decide, this is how I'm going to handle it, and maybe instead of going and, you know, it'd be nice if Abraham would have done and said, well, I called out to God, and this is what he told me to do. He doesn't say, he said, I said to myself. When you say to yourself, you really take some risk there, and that's what Abraham did. He said, there is surely no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Number two, he had a judgmental spirit. Surely there is no fear of God in this place. Again, Abraham, as good of a man as he was, he tended to take the place of God there, and he pronounced judgment, or at least he spoke in his heart judgment about Abimelech and the people there, and he was wrong, as it turns out, even though he thought he was right. I said to myself, there is surely no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Abraham was real confident in the beauty of his wife, apparently, but he did misjudge Abimelech in this place. And so what can we say about Abraham? It seems in this story that his faith is still in process. And what do we learn from that? Well, what do we see about Sarah in this story? Again, her role in this story is once again, she seems to be carried about by others. We've described Sarah before in the story of Abraham, and absolutely beautiful is one of the characteristics that emerges out of Sarah. Yet her name, her first name, meant bitterness. Sarah had within her great beauty. You might say maybe Sarah was even cursed by her beauty. She had unusual beauty, but her name indicated that she also had a struggle with bitterness on the inside, maybe because her life was always cared about by the men around her. Maybe you think of Sarah's life and it was always other people and what they did and other men and how they treated her. And she really, in this story at least, is like a... She's just going along for the ride. She has nothing to do with this story other than she's in the middle of it. You know, sometimes we're in the middle of things and we feel like we're being carried on by the currents around us and we can't control it. And that's true. Sometimes we go through hard times because of other people's actions and problems that we might not have brought on ourselves, but they're a part of living in a hurting world and living with people, and kind of have a feeling that Sarah... You know, I've been kind of hard on Sarah when we looked at a prior story, but I'll say of Sarah in this story, I mean, the only thing you can say that Sarah did anything wrong was she was beautiful. And here, her husband asked her to lie about who she was, and so she does. You know, she does what her husband tells her to, and then Abimelech calls for her, and so she's whisked off to the palace and wherever the harem was, and it's like, what does Sarah do? She's a woman in a culture that doesn't respect the women, really, as their own beings and their own persons. Sarah seems here to be the innocent party. Abraham had told her a long time ago, Sarah, you're too beautiful. Say you're my sister, you know. So Abimelech says, well, good. If she's your sister, Abimelech really just shocked Abraham. I think Abimelech said, okay, so, well, if she's your sister, she's game for me. So bring her in. I'm going to make her my wife. And, you know, Abraham's plans didn't work out. He thought that it would keep this from happening, but it did not keep it from happening. And so Abimelech calls Sarah. And, you know, when the king sends his court to come out and do something, you pretty much were locked into it, you know. And I have a feeling they came and knocking on Sarah's tent, Sarah, the king's noticed you. You're to come with us immediately. And Sarah can't control that. And yet, so she becomes a pawn really of these men and Abimelech in this case. She did pay a price for being so beautiful, though no fault of her own. Well, what about Abimelech? Obviously, the main, you might say the main character of this story. And again, this is the only story really about Abimelech. There's other Abimelechs in the Bible, but this story is the primary story about this particular man. We know that he was rich and he was powerful. He held a kingdom, which in Old Testament times, you can be a king of six people. You know, a king when we think of is millions of people, but in the Old Testament times, there were kings all over. But even they, no matter how big their kingdom, and this was a kingdom that had some territory to it, and so he had a lot of people under him. He was rich and powerful. He controlled it. We know that he had a harem, so that would tell you also that he had an influence, and he had a lot of people that worked, did what he asked them to do. He had a court, it says here. Early the next morning, Abimelech summoned all his officials, and so he did have a lot of people around him and underneath him, and he was rich and powerful. But something that seems to be shown about Abimelech that we don't see in a lot of Old Testament characters is Abimelech apparently was very conscientious, and he had a heart toward God. And this perhaps is one of the things that Abraham misjudged. He didn't believe that Abimelech did, or he didn't know Abimelech. But everything we see about Abimelech is he does what is right. He's conscientious, and what he did regarding Sarah was honorable. He was acting on the information that he had, and again, Abimelech almost seems like a victim here as well. Not only Sarah, but also Abimelech. He's rich and powerful, and as most kings did in the days before the law of Moses and presented in the Old Testament, he in the culture of the day, he had a harem, but yet he was very conscientious. Abimelech was shocked that he had been accused of taking another man's wife. When he is confronted about that, it says in verse 3, how does Abimelech find out that he's been lied to? Verse 3 says, but God came to Abimelech in a dream one night and said to him. So you wonder, how does Abimelech find out? Well, he finds out by the mercy of God. It's God himself who comes and says, Abimelech, what you're about to do is very wrong. You're about to take another man's wife. That tells us that even in that day, there was a moral code that people believed and either lived by or didn't live by. And although we speculate about it because there's things such as polygamy and things that we don't honor today or believe in or follow today, there was a code of ethics, and Abimelech apparently had followed that as best we know. But it's God who comes to Abimelech in the night. In a dream, he comes and speaks to him. God came to him. He says to him, basically, Abimelech, you're on a path to destruction. You're about to really mess up. You're about to get yourself into a problem that you are going to absolutely regret. You are as good as dead, God says to Abimelech. Now, you know, when I first read this story and I read this verse, I thought, boy, he was ready to strike Abimelech. Then I realized that's not it. God was saying, Abimelech, I want to get your attention. I'll let you know the path you're on is really going to be destructive. So get off the path. It was God's mercy for Abimelech. And his understanding, I'm sure that Abimelech had not been deceptive. But God in his mercy reached out to save Abimelech from destruction that would have happened if he would have married Abraham's wife. You also remember that God had a plan. And he had a covenant with Abraham. And he had a covenant about Sarah to have this baby boy. And if it is earlier, which it seems like, if it's not, and it really is closer chronologically in here, I mean, if it's chronologically where it is in the Bible, that would be within the year that Sarah has her baby boy. How quickly that could have happened. How quickly the whole plan could have been messed up because Abraham got outside of God's will. Abraham decided that he couldn't trust God about his wife Sarah. And look how quickly it could have been destroyed. God saved Abraham and Sarah in Egypt. You remember that? He brought them out. Pharaoh found out, and God brought them out. And once again, God steps in and he shows his faithfulness to his covenant and his promises. It says here that, so God stepped in, and he says you're on a path to destruction. In the next verse, Abimelech had not gone near her, so he said, Lord, will you destroy an innocent nation? Did he not say to me, she is my sister? So far, I've talked about three characters. Talked about Abraham, talked about Sarah, just a little bit, and I talked about Abimelech. But the most important character in this story is God. He doesn't leave us alone. He's there in our lives. And he follows our lives. And he wants to help us. At times when we would mess it up, I believe we have a God who in his mercy and his grace steps in and can keep us from doing things that would not be wise if we listen. One thing about Abraham is when God stepped in, he listened. You know? One thing about Abraham, it's like David too. When God stepped in, David listened. When God stepped in, Abraham listened. That might be one of the lessons that we really ought to read from the patriarchs in the Old Testament and other people, is they pleased God because when he stepped in, they responded. And I think you can say that of Abraham. In his mercy, he spared Abraham here. He spared Sarah. He spared Abimelech. And he allowed Abraham to be blessed in the process. Abimelech, his response to all this, again, just shows how good character Abimelech has. Abimelech is horrified that he's almost done this. He believes that he didn't do anything wrong, it wasn't his fault, but how close it was to destruction. And he's so thankful that he'd been delivered. So what does he do? He brings all these gifts out, and he says, Abraham, why'd you do this to me? But Abraham, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to give you. I'm going to say live anywhere you want to in the land. I don't know. I wonder if Abimelech was so thankful for God's mercy. He brought sheep and cattle and male and female slaves, and he gave them to Abraham. I would think of anything, he'd want to shoot Abraham. But, you know. But he, and then to Sarah, it says in verse 16, to Sarah he said, I am giving your brother 1,000 shekels of silver. This is to cover the offense against you before all who are with you. I mean, boy, that's a pretty graceful, merciful Abimelech here. You know, he really didn't do anything wrong, but he says, boy, Sarah, it was so close. It, almost this could have happened, and I'm sorry about that. Now, Abimelech, you know, this would be a good text about restitution too, you know. What do you do when you've wronged somebody? Maybe even been close to that. I just think about this part of the story and how true it is. Abimelech wanted to make it right. Whatever it was, he chose to make it right. And his way, he honored God. And he somehow knew right from wrong. And Abimelech wanted to be right. He was more righteous than Abraham, I believe you would say, in this story. And he recognizes the hand of God. Whoever Abimelech was and whatever else happened, we don't know. But we know that in this story, he seemed to show his righteousness. It looks like Abraham learned something here. That's what it would seem like. The last thing we hear about Abraham is that he prays for Abimelech. And I think that's a pretty neat part of the story. It says, then Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech, his wife, and his slave girls. See my misprint there. Slave girls. And God healed them. See, God had closed their wombs so that nobody in Abimelech's household could have children. Now, that also tells me this took a while. This wasn't a one-week thing. I mean, that's why another reason it would seem like this story must have taken place earlier. If God closed their wombs, for them to know that wouldn't have been in 2 weeks. You know, probably months and months, maybe even a year or 2 years. I don't know how long it was. But for a while, God closed the womb of Abimelech's household until this could be taken care of. And so what does Abraham do? He prays to the Lord. It'd be interesting to know what Abraham prayed. You know, I kind of presume that his heart was right if he prayed to the Lord. And, you know, he said, God, I messed this up pretty good. I've caused there to be this. And God, you've delivered me from it. You've blessed me. I mean, I wonder if Abraham just feels like, wow, God is just incredible. Who is this God who saved me from doing this terrible thing, bringing on this punishment for this man and this nation and this kingdom that they didn't deserve at all? I mean, when I think of this story, that's kind of what comes to mind. I wonder if Abraham, in this verse 17, he prayed to God and God healed Abimelech. Once again, an example that God hears our prayers. He prayed to God and God acted. God acted. I don't know if God would have acted anyway, maybe. You know, I always believe God does what's right. Maybe I don't know why he doesn't do what he does, but I believe he does what's right and he knows what to do. And in this story, God opened up and healed. And it was preceded by the prayer of Abraham. The best thing to do when we mess up, best thing to do when we've not gotten it right, best thing to do when our faith has been weaker than it should be, best thing to do when our actions have caused someone else to be hurt, is to pray to the Lord, verse 17, and say, Lord, you do what's right, and God did what was right in Abimelech and his family.